of the Pack podcast. Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signing.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Hey, how we doing, Green Bay, Wisconsin? It is Victory Tuesday. I am Jacob Westendorf. I am giddy as ever. The Green Bay Packers defeated the Seattle Seahawks 27-17 on Sunday, and we're going to talk about it right here on Pulse of the Pack. Joined with me, as always, is my good friend out in Arizona, Jason Perrone. Jason, how's it rolling?
It's rolling well. What a great win it is. 3 days later, 2 days later, I'm still kind of in awe over the whole thing. You know, it's a big monkey off the team's back. Team played a pretty solid game. I had a tough time writing my game ball as a lame call for a good reason. I didn't have a ton of lame calls. So that ended up being a good thing, and can't wait to break it down and talk about this next game, which has a little bit of an added extra special flair to it.
It does have a little added and extra special flair to it, and I'm assuming we're talking about the same reason. You and I will be present in the stadium for the first time since last November. We were there together to watch the Packers take out the New England Patriots. So when we are both aware of each other's presence on the stadium, the Packers are undefeated. Just one game. But it'll be fun against the Kansas City Chiefs. But before we move on to that, let's talk about the win over the Seattle Seahawks. The offense kind of hit a wall, but overall, Aaron Rodgers, he's the best quarterback in the world. And for my money, I'm not sure how close it is at this point. He was amazing against Seattle's secondary. Granted, it's not the Legion of Boom. Cam Chancellor didn't play. That's still a really good defense over there, and the Packers ripped them to shreds. I find myself in awe of his mobility. It didn't matter what happened, who went down. They found a way. They scored 27 points against a very good defense, even despite all the things going against them. Just how good is this guy, Jason?
Unreal. It's unreal. We talk about it every week, about trying to appreciate everything that we're seeing, and we see the numbers week in and week out. And, you know, I mean, we were spoiled to see some of the fun things that Brett Favre did. And Aaron Rodgers, you know, I always sat there and used to think to myself, like, man, what would it be like to have an amazing quarterback didn't turn the ball over? And so sometimes when you wish out loud, it knows. And it did know. It gave us Aaron Rodgers. And a lot of us, you know, I myself included at the time, were skeptical that he could be the guy when he got drafted and when they were starting to move him in there, and with the whole fiasco that was 2008. Unreal. Just incredible. And unfortunately, I do think we all fall into that trap of just kind of expecting it, you know, oh, he'll get out of it. Or when the ball leaves Aaron's hands, we just assume that it's either going to fall in a Packers receiver's hands or it's going to fall incomplete. And it's a great thing to know that he's that careful with the ball, but he just makes the most amazing things happen in the different positions, on the run, to the left, to the right, you know, in the pocket, scrambling around. It's just so cerebral out there, and it's a joy to watch. I can't wait to see it live. Monday Night Football, home game, Lambeau Field. You know he's going to be up for that one.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, the Packers have a lot of things going for them for that game, a lot of things going against them as well. We'll talk about that more as we get through it. But let's go through some more positives and negatives on the offense here. Eddie Lacy injured his ankle. The x-rays were negative on that, so that's good news. The bad news is he could miss Monday's game. We'll see how that goes. Davante Adams was injured. He returned to the game. The skill position players, there was a bit of a wrinkle. That kind of turned the tide throughout the game as it went. Packers ran to what there was what they call their Cobra package. It's something that I was excited about when they brought in Ty Montgomery. They didn't use it against the Bears. Montgomery only played one offensive snap, but they did use it against the Seattle Seahawks, and it paid some dividends. It was 17-16 in the late third, early fourth quarter. The Packers' offense had been bogged down, and they needed something to be a spark, and this is what they turned to. Cobb was in the backfield. They got some matchups for him. Ty Montgomery made some big plays. Ultimately ended in a touchdown to Richard Rodgers. They gave the Packers a lead that they wouldn't give up. So, Jason, did Ty Montgomery earn more reps on offense based on that one performance?
Yeah, he definitely did. Remember we talked about him stepping up and becoming a bigger part of the offense right when Jordy went down? Before we knew they were going to bring James Jones back, we figured Ty's going to be the man. He's going to become that third guy now because Jordy's out of the mix instead of him being the fourth guy. But it was evident, and, you know, right away that he got in the game, made the game. And, you know, I think Rodgers went right to him, threw the ball right to him, great hands, steady hands. He made a nice catch, you know, made some nice moves. We've seen what he's done on a kick return. We know what he can do in space, and, you know, integrating him into the offense and having the confidence with Rodgers, we've talked about that a billion times. You got to have Rodgers' support. You got to have his confidence. Looks like Montgomery definitely has that. He's earned it, made a couple plays. Now what I'm excited to see is something I think you're going to talk about a little bit later, Jacob, which is the Cobra package. And, man, get that thing going before the season gets along too far. By the time the playoffs come around, that's another wrinkle opposing defenses are going to have to deal with.
Yeah, it will be. And you know what? That's the thing I was talking about when it came to Seattle Seahawks. I talked about it all offseason. The Packers, those are the kinds of players that gave Seattle fits. Watch the Super Bowl against New England. Julian Edelman, Shane Vereen. Now, granted, Shane Vereen's not exactly Randall Cobb or Ty Montgomery as a receiver, but slot-type players that can work the middle of that field and beat their linebackers, you can get that in one-on-one coverage. That's what that package does, and that's what that package did on Sunday night. And the Seahawks didn't have an answer for it. They just couldn't stop them. Other things about the offense, I mentioned Davante Adams. His slow start kind of continues this time because of an injury. We'll see how that goes forward into next Monday's game. I would expect he came back in the game, he's going to be able to play. One more thing, all James Jones does is catch touchdowns. He beat Richard Sherman for a touchdown on a free play. Aaron Rodgers was excellent with the hard count on Sunday night, as he always is. He's the best hard count quarterback in the game. But James Jones, the only one funny tidbit is he was cut in favor of Preston Parker for the New York Giants. Preston Parker was released today. So thank you once again, Jerry Reese, for giving the Packers another reliable target. Anything to add on all James Jones does is catch touchdowns?
That's pretty much it. All James Jones does is catch touchdowns, and he's already become, I think he's leading the league in touchdown catches. If he's not leading, he's got to be right up there again. It's like 2012, the Redux. 89 is back. So excited.
Yeah, it's nice to see. He had one taken away from him just before halftime. Part of his body was out of bounds. I thought it looked a little hard to overturn, but I also watched that game completely through the eyes of the fan. Tried to be objective, and after the first series, I found out very clearly that was not going to be the case. One more thing I do want to talk about. Don Barclay, you know, a lot of worry about him with Brian Bulaga's injury. Held up okay. The Pro Football Focus numbers will say that he didn't. I'm saying by the eye test, yeah, Aaron Rodgers' mobility probably saved him a couple sacks. If it was Peyton Manning back there, the Seahawks might have had 12 sacks in that game. But I thought Barclay played okay, all things considered. It looked like they were trying to cover up some of his weaknesses, allow the speed to get in, and try and rope the speed rushers around the corner instead of having them take him head-on. But he wasn't terrible. David Bakhtiari wasn't very good either, but the interior was dominant. The Packers can hang their hat on the interior offensive line. If that's healthy with Sitton, Lindsley and Lang, they're going to be very good in the middle, which will allow escape lanes for Rodgers to find open players. One thing I want to talk about, it's a little early in the process here, but David Bakhtiari is in his third year as a starter, and I would say he's an above-average pass blocker, a below-average run blocker. But looking ahead a little bit, and this is more of an off-season conversation, he has plenty of time to fix this, but looking ahead a little bit, that's what we do here. Is David Bakhtiari worth elite left tackle money?
Well, we talked about this right before the show, and what, it's his third year? Yeah, so, I mean, this is coming up. I mean, this is going to become a discussion point. I don't think so. I mean, he's an okay left tackle. I would say he's he's borderline good. You know, he has the stretches where he plays okay. He had the knee injury in preseason. I don't know if that's still bothering him at all in any way, shape, or form. All I do know is I was just kind of watching one of the plays where Bruce Irvin lines up just outside of Bakhtiari and just way too easy. Just quick speed move off the edge, swats the hands down, gets around Bakhtiari, and gets the hand on Rodgers. Rodgers, you know, his capability, fortunately, he's able to eke his way out of a sack. But anytime you've got a guy with speed on the edge, Bakhtiari's in trouble. And that's not something that you want to have in the back of your head with regards to your starting left tackle, and that's your quarterback's blind side. So, you know, they talked about that on Green and Gold today, I think on Monday's show. And Bill Johnson, you know, sometimes he gets a little crazy, but he was talking about how if Bakhtiari keeps playing the way he played on Sunday, and we might actually see Scott Tolzien at quarterback, which would be a terrible situation for the Packers. So definitely not elite left tackle money at this point right now. I mean, you know, the Packers might have some decisions to make when it's that draft. They're looking for what position they're going to go after or what particular guy they might have. You know, the one thing in Bakhtiari's favor is that all the good left tackles are usually gone by the 15th pick or so, probably the top 10 pick, to be honest with you. So the Packers, you know, the way things have been going, never picked that early. So he might end up getting paid, but not elite.
Yeah, knock on wood. Hopefully the Bill Johnson, Scott Tolzien prediction doesn't come true, because I've seen that movie and I don't like how it goes for about 6 weeks or 8 weeks or so. But Bakhtiari, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I believe in him. I think that having a good pass blocker on the left tackle, I think they can manage with him being an average run blocker if he can improve in that regard. But, yeah, as of now, giving him elite left tackle money might be a struggle. I still think that the Packers should look to get a left tackle or a tackle in general with the injury issues of Brian Bulaga, the guard-type skill set that Don Barclay has, and the struggle with Bakhtiari we're talking about. They should be looking at a tackle early in next year's draft. But that's a long way to go before we even got to talk about that. Offensively, one more guy that I thought played really well, and in some ways that may not show up, that's Richard Rodgers. I've harped on the tight end position. I think that's a position where, while he was kind of invisible, Jimmy Graham, Rob Gronkowski, Vernon Davis, guys that can make plays down the field is something in today's NFL that's necessary. But Richard Rodgers is a pretty good little role player that they got going there. Caught a touchdown. He's becoming a better red zone target. He's becoming a better blocker. This guy is pretty good, I think. Do the Packers have a tight end they can at least rely on now? I know that was a big question coming in the year, but it's pretty clear he supplanted Andrew Corliss. Is this their guy?
This is their guy. And 2 years ago, when we were over at allgbt.com and we all had to pick a round of that draft to cover, I ended up with the third round. And you know why I'm telling this story, because Richard Rodgers was the second third-round pick that the Packers made, and before Kyrie Thorne, the defensive lineman who was cut and not even on the roster anymore. And Richard Rodgers was also, at the time, a little bit of a head-scratcher in the third round because he didn't have a third-round grade on a lot of boards. I think he was a little closer to fifth, sixth round. So I profiled Rodgers. He came in. You know, obviously we saw the improvements that he made. He was incredible in the playoffs. Had that great catch on an even better throw from Rodgers against the Cowboys, which ended up being a game-winning touchdown. And he played well against the Seahawks the following week. I think he had 5 receptions in that game. So, you know, showed up big when the spotlight was big. You know, like you said, he had the touchdown catch. He really didn't make that many grabs, but it's all about efficiency. You know, it doesn't matter how many snaps you're in there for. It's what you do with the time on the field. And if he's going to become a better blocker, that's something Andrew Corliss never did well. So he's absolutely the number one tight end. And Rodgers is the guy moving forward. He, you know, he's got the respect and the admiration of the quarterback. And I think he's another high-character guy. I mean, here you go. You know, here's another guy. We talk about Bakhtiari. He was a fourth-rounder. You got Corey Linsley at center. He was a fifth-rounder. Richard Rodgers, a third-rounder, picked a little bit higher, probably should have been picked a little bit later. You know, for as much as Ted Thompson gets flack for missing, here's another nice gem that he may have found. And Richard Rodgers, for all – I mean, you know, he's not Jimmy Graham. He's not Rob Gronkowski, but who is? I think the Packers might still have a tight end they can count on for the better part of the next decade if he stays healthy.
That's a good way to put it. In that draft class, while the talk of the misses on Jared Aberderis, who hasn't been able to be on the field, Kyrie Thorne will certainly be talked about. That draft includes Clinton Dix, starting safety, Devontae Adams, starting wide receiver, Richard Rodgers starting tight end, Corey Linsley starting center. Dimitri Goodson's on the roster. He does some good things on special teams. That's a very good draft. David Bakhtiari's fourth rounder. That's a different draft. But one story I do want to tell off your Richard Rodgers thing. I was interning for Packer Report at the time of that draft, and I was sitting in the media room, and literally that pick came across the screen, and literally everybody looked around like, who the hell is that? The theory that a lot of guys had was, it was almost like they said they were going to pick a tight end in the third round, and as those guys came off the board, that was the next one on their board, and they took him regardless, and it's turned out to be a pretty good pick, or so I think at least so far. So if all James Jones does is catch his touchdowns, then all Richard Rodgers does is catch game-winning touchdowns, one against the Cowboys and now one against the Seahawks. Big time out of Richard Rodgers. One thing post-game that took place, for those of you that are Packers fans, you're probably Badgers fans as well. So Russell Wilson definitely gets a lot of love, and deservedly so. I think he, by all accounts, seems to be a pretty good guy. I think he's a pretty good quarterback. It was weird, his offseason. We kind of joked about his recovery water. I was standing behind the Seahawks sideline before the game. I drank some of the water from behind the sideline and was joking with the camera guy I was with that was the recovery water. I wanted to feel good for the rest of the game. I was being a smart mouth, but you know, he does some weird things, and last year he said that, you know, God had planned for the Seahawks to win that NFC Championship game. He set up the way that game goes so they could come back and win. And Aaron Rodgers, after the game, kind of took a shot at that. He's so smart. Everything he does is pointed. There's a reason for everything he does and everything he says. And after the game he said, you know, God was a Packers fan tonight. And there is absolutely a 0% chance that wasn't a shot at Russell Wilson. And, you know, I don't want to get into a theological discussion because I don't think this is the format for it. But as a man of my beliefs, I do believe that God doesn't care about the outcome of football games. I think he cares about the people in them. Rodgers has said that more than 1,000 times. He's made that very clear. What do you make of this? Is this a big deal? Did you laugh? Did you, like, give a slam on the table of, hey, good job, Aaron? Or did you think it was pointless? What do you think on the God doesn't care kind of thing, or, you know, God was a Packers fan, Jason.
This is Aaron Rodgers. You're very right. He's calculated about everything that he says, and yeah, I think to myself, hey, you know, it's kind of that old adage, you know, when you win, say little or say nothing. When you lose, say even less. And Aaron Rodgers seems to do that a lot. He lets his play do the talking for him. But, you know, every once in a while he'll throw something out there. Remember last year, when he was in Minnesota and they beat the Vikings, and he had the purple beverage at the press conference after the game, and he made sure everybody saw him drinking it. And just, you know, there's little things that drive Aaron Rodgers. He thrives on that chip on his shoulder. And he obviously took exception to some of the comments that Russell Wilson made last year about the NFC Championship game, about how God was on their side, made it happen, whatever it was that Wilson said. And I particularly thought to myself, you know, at first, I thought to myself, man, the Seahawks had the Packers number for a while. Yeah, and then we finally beat them, but it's a different team, and they, you know, they let the NFC Championship game slip away. It was in Green Bay. They never won on the road. But it's Aaron Rodgers. It's almost like, you know, in Ted we trust, in Aaron we have to trust. So if he's doing it, you know, then there's got to be a reason for it. If it motivates him and makes him play better, I'm all for it, because to be honest with you, I don't really have an opinion on Russell Wilson one way or another. I don't dislike him. I don't like him. But at this point, though, I mean, honestly, if you're talking about the magnitude of it, I think, you know, it's been a thing for the past couple of days. It's only going to start to go away more and more. And I think, you know, by the time the next week comes around, there'll be a new story that will take over. I don't think there's much to it.
Neither do I. And for the record, you know, Rodgers did come out and say last year that the grape crush incident that you're discussing, he said it meant nothing. Whether or not that's true, really only he knows. But it was still an interesting troll job, if that's what he was doing. That's enough about the offense. What won this game for the Packers, in my opinion, was the defense. And I know that's weird to say, because the third quarter, they kind of got sliced and diced all over the place, which we are going to talk about. But I do want to start with the positive, because there were two matchups, Jason, that we discussed specifically on last week's show that we said terrified us. The Packers gave up a boatload of running yards to Matt Forte. They tend to get gassed by tight ends. Marshawn Lynch, 2.7 yards per carry. That is incredible for a guy like that. I mentioned it last week. Paul talked about it. The Seahawks,
they kind of start thriving when Lynch has his signature break 37 tackle type runs. Packers didn't allow that, and that was without their starting inside linebacker, Sam Barrington. Nate Palmer played pretty well from what I could see. The Packers did a good job gang tackling. I think the biggest thing in the run game, the resurgence of B.J. Raji. Raji was unblockable, absolutely unblockable during that game. I know he was going against an inexperienced center, but still, it's hard to dominate people in the NFL. B.J. Raji hasn't done that in a while. That's got to be a positive thing to see. What are you thinking about the Packers' nose tackle right now? B.J. Raji is the freezer back.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to see Raji doing well because he had the year off last year. He played okay in the preseason, but there were still some questions about how well he was going to do. And with Dayton Jones out, he's not a nose tackle, but with Dayton out, you need all hands on deck. And so to see Raji step up and play well is a great thing. I mean, this is a contract year. It's the second straight contract year. He didn't get to play one out last year. And this year, he's once again, this is kind of a one-year deal, prove-it deal. And so, there's a chance the Packers may end up re-signing him afterwards, bringing it back for a couple more years. I mean, he's still somewhat young. He was a rookie in 2009, so he still probably has some years left. But you're going to get Guyon back after week three, and that's when it's going to get really fun because then you can start rotating these guys in and out and doing what they need to do. But Raji's held it and anchored it, and if you had a tougher start to the schedule, especially when you talk about the Seahawks, and the offensive line isn't as good as it used to be, but Russell Wilson's very mobile. The 3-4 defense, the big thing is to clog up the front and let the linebackers do their thing. Raji's definitely done that in both week one and week two. He's been a big part of the success that they've had up front and the push that they got there. And it's one of the reasons why defensively they were able to do what they were able to do. I thought Raji was a catalyst and he helped everybody else do what they had to do, but as far as Lynch goes, credit that to Dom Capers. It looked like he just had the right scheme finally figured out on how to keep those cutback lanes closed off and just bottle up beast mode. And in fact, I don't even think we should use that term because he was anything but on Sunday. Raji was a big reason why.
Absolutely was. Not all well and good for the run defense, though. They still did give up a lot of yards on that stupid read option, a gimmick that I absolutely despise. But it's still there, and it's still something that they're going to attack with. Mike Neal made one nice play on the read option. Otherwise, Russell Wilson did have some nice plays off of that. That's something that the Packers will probably see some of when they see Colin Kaepernick next week against the San Francisco 49ers. The other matchup we talked about was Jimmy Graham. We mentioned how Jimmy Graham always lights up the Packers, and he essentially lights up just about everybody. I don't know if it was scheme or if it's the lack of a role within the offense. Jimmy Graham reportedly, quote, hates his role in Seattle. He's upset about his lack of involvement in the offense. There are some other matchups I didn't think the Seahawks took advantage of. I thought Tyler Lockett, I mentioned him. I thought he could be a player that could give the Packers some issues. He only had the one catch. Jimmy Graham, one catch for 11 yards. Jason, how surprised were you at really the invisibility of Jimmy Graham? This is a guy who is occasionally mentioned in the same sentence as Rob Gronkowski. I think Gronkowski is pretty much established he's in a league of his own right now. But after that, it's pretty widely thought that Jimmy Graham is the second best tight end in the league. The Seahawks have him with a total of 7 catches in 2 games. This is something that better for them. Otherwise, it's going to continue to be a disaster. Graham will only get more frustrated. This is a guy that they're wasting right now. What did you think of the way the Packers defended him, one, and two, the Seahawks' general lack of usage of him?
I don't know. It's an interesting thing. We've seen this happen before. I can't think of a specific example of a guy. I mean, I guess, maybe you look at like a Trent Richardson, but he just was a dumpster fire as a running back to begin with, but it goes to another team and all of a sudden it's a different scenario. I mean, he was the man in New Orleans. He and Drew Brees were a 1-2 punch, and Seattle needed this piece of their offense. And I think when you heard the trade that the Seahawks traded for Jimmy Graham, didn't you kind of get a little nervous knowing they were on the schedule? It's like, oh great, then we got Jimmy Graham. There's another big tight end they're gonna have to cover, and you figure there's no way that they weren't gonna make him a focal point of this offense, especially with the lack of receivers that the Seahawks have. But for some reason, and I don't know if it's a chemistry thing, if it's with Pete Carroll, if he's in the doghouse, or if they just literally, I mean, Darrell Bevell it's not his first rodeo as an offensive coordinator. I mean, he was the offensive coordinator for the Minnesota Vikings in 09 when they had that great season. He, you know, got another magical year out of Brett Favre. He's been doing some decent things up in Seattle with Wilson and that offense there. So it is just kind of baffling. I mean, it was surprising, but I'm not going to complain because that was one thing the Packers definitely weren't as equipped to handle. It was something I thought, man, how are they going to match him up? Do they bring in Sean Richardson? He's not really known for his coverage skills. Do they bring Ha-Ha up and put him one-on-one on Graham? You got to put a bigger body in there. Fortunately, and hopefully it wasn't a linebacker because I didn't think any of the linebackers could do the job. But, yeah, it's just one of those things. And Seattle doesn't figure it out pretty quickly. It's just, you know, it's a big loss for them because they gave up a lot to bring him in. And, you know, for their sake, hopefully it's just a matter of some growing pains and they get over it quickly. But if not, all the better for everybody else, including the Packs.
Yeah, all the better for everybody else. That's a good way to put it. It wasn't all sunshine and rainbows on the defense. You know, I mentioned some things about the zone read. Another thing that is a little troubling, Sam Shields played well. That was nice to see. Was only targeted on one pass. He made a nice play on a bubble screen. Sam Shields not really known for his tackling ability, but he was pretty good in coverage from what my eye could see. Two guys in particular struggled. Those were the other two corners that are the preferred starters, if you will. Micah Hyde in the slot, Casey Hayward on the outside. Demarius Randall played well again, targeted once off the top of my head, made a play down the boundary, knocked the ball away. He's in position. He makes some good plays. Micah Hyde, listen, those of you that have listened or read a lot of the stuff I've said, I like Micah Hyde. I kind of get the reputation as somebody who doesn't like Micah Hyde, and that's not true. I think there are some things he shouldn't be asked to do. I think that Doug Baldwin is a limited wide receiver. I think that Deion Sanders' assessment last year of the Seahawks being okay at wide receiver, I think they are just okay. Micah Hyde struggled with Baldwin. He got beat on a touchdown play. He just seems to be behind in coverage. He's not a guy that I think should be asked to run with receivers down the field. And Casey Hayward, back-to-back games, he's kind of struggled on the outside. I know it's an adjustment. I'm willing to give him a little bit of patience as far as adjusting to a new role, but he didn't play particularly well either. With Demarius Randall playing the way that he is, my preference would be a move of Casey Hayward to the slot and putting Randall outside in nickel situations, because I think that is a more natural position for both of them. Randall is an outside corner. Looks like he's proven that. Casey Hayward was the best slot corner in football his rookie season. He's played well in the slot in the years after his rookie season. And this is nothing against Micah Hyde. I definitely think he has a role on this defense somewhere, but I think they have to use him creatively. And I think that a better option is Demarius Randall playing outside and moving Casey Hayward into the slot. Do you have a disagreement? Am I overreacting to one game?
No, you're underreacting, because I say move Demarius Randall outside, period. I mean, it's too early to say that right now, but that's what I see in my crystal ball. I love the play that Randall made downfield. I watched some of the early games. You know, it's nice every once in a while when the Packers play Sunday night or Monday night to be able to just sit back on Sunday, which is, you know, for those of us that work a weekday schedule, that's your last day off. You want it to be relaxing. You want to kind of just chill out and just watch some games. Nice to be able to kind of sit back, chill out, watch some games. I watched a ton of guys, and these are good corners. Kyle Fuller comes to mind. Veterans of the game that have been doing it for a while, covering receivers downfield, not turning their head around. I mean, I understand, obviously, I don't have the speed to be in the NFL, and I didn't play corner. I was a safety when I played in high school 1 year. I barely played. But it's, you know, they teach you that from the very beginning. You got to get your head turned around. You can't do anything if you can't see what's going on. You got to turn your head. These guys don't turn their heads because they're beat. And they think, you know, if you turn your head and you turn your neck while you're running, it's probably going to slow you down a little bit. And in the NFL, a half a step can be the difference between a touchdown and a broken up pass. But Randall got his head whipped around. I love the play. He, you know, he's got confidence in his game. He doesn't have blazing speed, but he's got enough speed to get there. And he made the nice pass break up there. So, I mean, I honestly can foresee him taking over and being the outside guy. And then you just have a quandary there with what you do with Hayward and Hyde. Because then you got two guys that have kind of worked the slot. They're going to have to kind of figure out some sort of a hybrid role for Hyde. He's just not good in coverage. Like, he got beat on the Baldwin touchdown. You're getting beat by Doug Baldwin. I mean, I understand he's an NFL receiver. But come on, man. You know, you can do better than that. Micah Hyde, the thing about Hyde is that, you know, yeah, he got beat for the touchdown. He still made a couple of plays. I mean, he's good for a couple of plays here and there. He's a punt returner. So does have value to the team. But, you know, I think you got to put your best guys on the field, and the Packers have the unfortunate problem right now of, you know, having very successfully replaced two cornerbacks that left in the offseason, and we still haven't even seen Quentin Rollins. So, I mean, there's a lot of good things going on in the defensive backfield. They got to get the best guys out there, though, because, you know, that's going to put them in the best position to win in each game, and as they face some of these teams with better receivers, you got eventually Detroit coming up with Calvin Johnson, you got the Vikings with Mike Wallace. Got to have your best guy out there. Randall's playing well. He could end up becoming one of those guys.
Yeah, definitely interesting. Quentin Rollins was inactive for the game. I thought that probably had something to do with his lack of contribution on special teams, as well as the need for extra linebackers with the injury to Sam Barrington. Speaking of linebackers, Clay Matthews. We talked about how, you know, he's an inside linebacker now, and that's fine. But they had bumped him out to outside. Clay Matthews didn't play a single snap on the outside against the Seattle Seahawks. Now, that goes twofold because he does make an impact in ways that are not seen, but you're also taking your best rush man and really making him a coverage type. And that's not necessarily something that you really want to do. Clay Matthews said all the right things after the game. He said, it's not about me, it's about the team. And that's fine, and that's good. But Clay, you're one of my favorite players, and I'm going to be selfish for you. They have to figure out a way to make him a pass rusher also. I think that one thing that they did this week that you're going to see, maybe I'm overreacting to the signing of a practice squad player, but Joe Thomas was signed off the Cowboys practice squad with Josh Boyd, who broke his ankle, being put on injured reserve. Joe Thomas, I think, is a player that can make an impact in coverage, and that's kind of what they're using Matthews for. Now, is Thomas a three-down linebacker? Absolutely not. But if he can come in and cover some guys the way that Clay has early and then allow him to be a pass rusher, that's only going to liven up this pass rush. Now, the pass rush on Sunday was non-existent. I think that was by design. I think they wanted to keep Wilson in the pocket as much as possible because you saw what happened when he got outside the pocket. He's dynamic out there. That's just how it is. I think that they were trying to keep him in the pocket and, you know, not really rush him to try and get, you know, allow them to get gashed on some plays like that. You could see the Packers did make some nice plays when he tried to break the pocket. Mike Neal, Mike Daniels, a couple guys made some plays when he tried to escape up the middle of the field. But Clay Matthews has to be a factor in the pass rush because if he's not, then teams are just going to be able to focus on Julius Peppers. As much as I do like Mike Neal, you know, he's just a guy. Nick Perry is just a guy. Andy Mulumba, kind of the same thing. Jayron Elliott, we'll talk about more here in a minute, I'm sure, because if those of you didn't hear, he had a pretty good game on Sunday. But to finish the thought on Matthews, he has to be somewhat in the game plan as being a pass rusher. We'll see if they do that with a pocket passer like Alex Smith coming in on Monday night. Or we'll see if he's kind of relegated to covering Travis Kelce, which we'll also talk about him a lot because, you know, I know Von Miller called him a fake Gronk, but he's still very good. That's something that gives the Packers trouble even with the good performance against Jimmy Graham. But any issues with the Clay Matthews role during the Seattle game?
No. Clay Matthews is a playmaker, and you got to put him in the best position to do what the team needs him to do. So even if he's upset about it, he's saying all the right things, and more importantly, he's still playing hard. And he's rushing the quarterback from different angles and from the inside, and I think they're still trying to get him in the backfield to wreak havoc, you know, with quarterbacks. This last game was a little different because with Russell Wilson, you got to be careful how you rush him. And Clay Matthews is the perfect guy to kind of spy a little bit and make sure that Wilson doesn't get too much space to roam out there. So, you know, he is the consummate teammate. He's been that since he came to this team back in 2009, proven his worth. And, you know, people talked about, you know, when they have to pay Matthews again, which isn't going to be for some time. I mean, they already gave him a new contract. But, you know, it's crazy that he's an inside linebacker. He's getting paid way too much. Get him back on the outside. Hey, put him where he needs to be to make plays. I mean, if you need an example of how this is working and why I don't have an issue with Clay Matthews, you know, this role on Sunday, 41 yards for Marshawn Lynch, you got me hooked. You got me convinced. I think, you know, whatever his role is, whether it's on the inside or the outside, keep doing what you're doing, Dom Capers, because they need this guy. And, you know, unfortunately, it comes down to the talent around him. So if we can see Jake Ryan develop, that was one of the things you and I, Jacob, talked about several times, is if Jake Ryan can develop and kind of continue to take hold of that middle spot, now that Barrington's hurt, you know, that kind of changes things a little bit because it's Nate Palmer, so you still have kind of a little bit of a liability there. I don't think Palmer's necessarily the greatest answer, but that could free up Matthews eventually later in the season. If Ryan's able to hold it down in the middle, you get Matthews back to the outside, and he can do his damage from there. But, no, I thought he was great on Sunday, and he'll continue to do what the team needs of him, and he'll continue to do great things. And, hey, Clay, if you're worried about the appeal that you have to your fan base, especially the ladies, you know, whether you're getting it done on the inside, in the middle, or on the outside, Packer Nation loves you, man.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. We'll see how Matthews' rolly ball is going forward. I'm still hoping that they allow him to get after the quarterback because that's when I think he's at his best. But that's why I'm also not a NFL defensive coordinator. That's going to bring us to the Mayfield play of the game. This is something that I mentioned last week we're going to do every week. It's sponsored by Mark Mayfield Sports, one of our great sponsors. We appreciate him. We will bring you every big play of every game, the biggest play of the game in this case because he is the biggest in his field. Mark Mayfield Sports play of the game for Jason Perrone was what?
Got the J-Ron Elliott interception. Nice read of Russell Wilson. Kept his eyes on Wilson the entire time. He tried to sneak a little outlet pass to Marshawn Lynch. Elliott stepped right in front of it, picked it off. Had a little issue as he was getting tackled. And, you know, he wasn't getting too fancy. It wasn't really his fault. Just, you know, Seattle offensive guys coming in, poking around at the ball. He fumbled the football. Packers were able to fall out and recover the fumble. And so the interception stood, but it was huge. It was late in the game. The Packers needed the ball back. It was, you know, Seattle was driving, and, you know, Green Bay really needed to kind of get the ball back, seize momentum, and kind of put this one away. And that's what that allowed him to do. So I'm going to go with the interception. You know, Elliott was only on the field, I think, it was either 5 or 7 snaps on defense. And I know that we're going to talk more about some other things that he did in this game, but we talked about efficiency earlier. I mean, you're only on the field for that many snaps. So an interception right there automatically is very efficient, especially at that point in the game. But the bigger thing is that, you know, we wanted to see what Elliott could do, if he could develop and kind of become that special player that the Packers thought they might have found, that hidden gem. He's an undrafted free agent. Had such a great preseason last year and then didn't play much this last season. And, you know, he's going to be counted on a little bit more if Matthews is going to be on the inside, like we talked about, to kind of help complement Julius Peppers. I think he's going to be great things for this defense. I'm excited to see what he does. And I talk about confidence all the time. A play like that's got to be a huge boost of confidence to him. I think in moving forward, you're going to start to see Jay Elliott's name a lot more on the highlight reels, and you'll start seeing him flying around on the field more than the 5 to 7 snaps we saw this past Sunday. So my Mayfield Sports play of the game, J-Ron Elliott, fourth quarter interception.
I think the funniest thing about that is early in the game, Andy Malumba was the option behind Peppers, Neal, and Perry, and then he got beat on a couple plays. J-Ron Elliott wasn't even really in the defensive game plan based on that. It took Andy Malumba kind of screwing the pooch for him to get on the field. So way to take advantage of an opportunity, young man, in my Mayfield Sports play of the game. After the Packers kicked a field goal to put them up 27-17 just after the 2-minute warning, anybody that was willing to listen to me, I joked and made the bet and, you know, kind of said out of fear, I will bet you anything that the Packers have to recover an onside kick to steal this game. Well, the Packers were playing their prevent defense. You know, the Seahawks were kind of marching down the field a little bit, getting some plays over the middle. The clock was winding. They clocked the ball. They hit Fred Jackson over the middle. J-Ron Elliott comes from behind him, strips the ball. Micah Hyde recovers it. That play officially made the game over. It ended the game. A lot of people will say, you know, the field goal maybe was the one that ended the game because it made it a two-score game. After seeing the way last year's game ended, I really have a hesitancy, if you will, to throw the dagger like Wayne Larrabee has done so well over his tenure as the Packers radio man. I didn't throw it personally after the field goal. I did after the forced fumble, and that allowed them to not have to recover an onside kick, allowed them to not have to do, you know, another thing on special teams and potentially have to relive the nightmare from last year. So my Mayfield Sports play of the game, because of what it meant, is Jayron Elliott's forced fumble of Fred Jackson, Micah Hyde's subsequent recovery. The Packers were able to kneel out the clock, and I was able to just smile like an idiot the rest of the night because the Green Bay Packers overcame and defeated the Seattle Seahawks, a team that had statistically and on the scoreboard owned them over the last three meetings. So that leads me to one final question, Jason, and that is, who needs the 12th man when you've got number 12, man?
Yeah. We talked about Rodgers earlier. You know, he's one thing I point to in this game when I knew it was over wasn't the interception, the fumble. There was a huddle late in the game, and they panned in on the huddle, and you look at Rodgers, and he's kind of got this little grin on his face. So the game's not over yet. The Packers haven't won yet. And I flash back to a game I was at in 2011. I was in San Diego for that Chargers game. And before the game started, Rodgers brought everybody over for a huddle. He had the team, you know, he had this, you know, this fun grin on his face. He was laughing, joking with his teammates, jawing with the Chargers on the other side that were kind of messing around with the team, and had that team really fired up, and they played an inspired game that day. And, you know, you just kind of know when this game is in hand because Aaron Rodgers, you get this sense from him that everything is going to be fine. I mean, it's like I said, it's like, how do you possibly fully appreciate everything that he is and brings to this team? It's just absolutely incredible. And that's a moment that I'll always remember in this particular game. This is a big win. I probably won't forget it for a while, but that's a moment I'll always remember. And it wasn't something that happened, you know, during a play. It's one of those things where you kind of knew, just you got the sense from the team, and he's the ace, man. Number 12 is the ace of this squad for sure.
Absolutely is. One more thing I want to bring up before we move on and look ahead to the Kansas City Chiefs matchup next week. I just want to give some props to Mike McCarthy and Tom Clements. I can't believe I forgot to mention this, but the adjustment they made to go with that Cobra package, they put their trust in Ty Montgomery, a rookie. McCarthy's gotten some fair or unfair, whatever way you want to look at it, criticism of the inability to make adjustments, trusting his guys, so to speak. They kind of threw that trust factor out the window and threw a rookie to the wolves and made that adjustment. Pete Carroll and his staff didn't have an answer for it. So Mike McCarthy, Tom Clements, you guys deserve big praise for a win here. I'm a big Mike McCarthy fan. I've mentioned that several times. I think he's one of the best coaches in the league. If not for a guy named Belichick, I think I wouldn't really have a problem calling him the best coach in the league. And maybe that's bias, but I just love everything he represents. Tom Clements, pretty good for your first big game as a play caller. I thought that, you know, I had mentioned to a guy that I was standing next to during the game after they got the Elliott interception. I said, if they go run, 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 punt, I'm going to throw up. Well, they didn't have a chance to go run, 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 punt because James Starks got a first down on second down. But nonetheless, they didn't get real conservative. The only play that I may have a complaint with is the quarterback draw down by the goal line. But all in all, it was able to bleed the clock, put the game down to the two-minute warning. The Packers ended up winning, so I can't complain. But props to Mike McCarthy for this. But that game is now over, and let's look ahead. The Kansas City Chiefs are coming to Lambeau Field. It is Monday Night Football. It is Lambeau Field under the lights. I saw the trailer today for Monday Night Football. They're playing Bang the Drum every single commercial this week on ESPN. I think it's fantastic. I know that Sunday Night Football is kind of the marquee matchup now, but there's something to me. I grew up in the era when Monday Night Football was it, and Monday Night Football is my favorite game for the Packers to play on. It sucks waiting until Monday, but overall I think it's worth it. All eyes will be on the Packers and the Kansas City Chiefs. Lambeau Field under the lights. I will be there. Jason will be there. We've mentioned that several times, but let's talk about how the game is going to go. Last week, a little small scouting report on the Kansas City Chiefs. They are 1-1. They defeated the Houston Texans in week one. They kind of blew them out of the water. The Texans, that's an absolute dumpster fire quarterback situation. They're just awful. It makes me appreciate Aaron Rodgers even more watching some other teams play. But they beat them, and then they had a game that looked like they had in hand against the Denver Broncos, and they found a way to lose that one. Jason, you mentioned it last week on the show. You mentioned it on Twitter right after that game. They have 10 days to stew on that loss and prepare for the Packers coming off an emotional win. So my question to you is, do you have any fear of a letdown game? Because I think that's a fair question, and my answer to that question is no. And the reason I have that answer is because this game's at Lambeau Field. A lot of times letdown games tend to come on the road against inferior opponents. Well, the Packers don't lose at home. They haven't lost at home since the San Francisco 49ers playoff game in the Frozen Water Bowl is what the offensive linemen were calling it at the point. But freezing cold, they lost to the 49ers, and realistically, that was a bad Packers football team that lost that game. Since then, they've dominated at home. They've won big games there. They beat the Patriots. They beat the Dallas Cowboys. They just beat the Seattle Seahawks, and they've pretty much blown everyone else out of the water. I'm not going to predict this game to be a blowout. You'll see that later. But I don't have any fear of a letdown game because Mike McCarthy, in my opinion, and Aaron Rodgers as well, with his kind of cool demeanor, they're kind of the masters of they don't get too low after a loss, and I don't think that they get too high after a win either. The Kansas City Chiefs are a very good opponent. I think that if the Packers do struggle, people will overlook that Kansas City's good and they'll call it a letdown game because of that, but I don't think that'll be the case. I look for the Packers to be just fine from a letdown game standpoint. What's your opinion on this one?
Well, it's easy to call it that proverbial trap game because it's the Chiefs, and do they strike fear in the heart? Not really. But the Chiefs have always, they've got a good defense. It's Andy Reid. They let one slip away against the Broncos this past week on Thursday. They're a good football team. They're a good defense. And that's the thing that the Packers are going to have to be prepared for, is that this defense is definitely going to get after Aaron Rodgers. I don't know how much different they are from 2011, but just look at the history here. The Packers have always kind of struggled against the Chiefs a little bit. They won a game in 2007, but I think that's the only time in the history of my entire being a fan, which spans longer than I want to admit right now, that they've beaten the Chiefs. So, it's fortunate that we only see them once every 4 years, because it just seems like they always do some sort of crazy magical thing, and so they can't take this game lightly. But, Aaron Rodgers, in his post-game comments or in his comments either today or yesterday, whenever it was, talked about how they're done with Seattle and it's another tough matchup this next week. He'll have his offense. He'll be ready. It's Monday night. It's Lambeau Field. They play well at home. This team has a very, very high sense of purpose and of task when it comes to their home game. They want to go undefeated. So the last thing they want to do is lose all the momentum of a great win against Seattle and then drop one of the Kansas City Chiefs. They're already going to accomplish what I wanted, which was at least 2-1 in the first three games. But, hey, get out there and run the table. It can absolutely happen. But you got a tough running back in Jamal Charles, and he's no Marshawn Lynch. He's angry. He fumbled and gave that game away. He's going to be looking to make some noise, looking for a crease and running hard and running with a purpose. The Packers are going to have to be very sound in their strategy against Jamal Charles and the Kansas City running game. But, it's funny. You got Alex Smith coming in, who was drafted before Aaron Rodgers in 2005. Smith went number one overall. Rodgers, thought he was going to go number one overall. A lot of people thought Rodgers might. He slipped to the Packers. We all know the deal. So if there isn't a little bit, we talked about God was a Packers fan and a little chip on the shoulder. You got Alex Smith, the guy that was drafted way ahead of you in that draft, even though it's 10 years later. Me thinks that might be a little bit of motivation for our number 12.
It very well could be, and Aaron Rodgers is the king of finding storylines like that to continue to motivate himself, even though he is the best quarterback in the NFL. The Kansas City Chiefs do have a good football team. Jason, I know you mentioned some of the past. 2011, that was a bad team. I was at that game. They ruined the Packers' perfect season. I still am not sure how. Before that, the Packers played in Kansas City in Favre's last year. Favre beat them, actually. Favre and the Packers beat them that day. Charles Woodson had an interception return for a touchdown to seal it. And then before that, Eddie Kinnison had a long touchdown in overtime to beat the Packers at Lambeau Field. That's the last meeting at Lambeau Field, to my knowledge. I looked it up earlier. I can't quite remember off the top of my head. But I do believe that is the last time that the Packers played the Chiefs at Lambeau Field. But this will be a good matchup. The Kansas City Chiefs, are they the New England Patriots? Are they the Seattle Seahawks? No. But they're still a very good football team. They're sound in certain places. Some of their top players, the scouting report that I have, it's kind of a watered-down version because I'm not a scout, but Travis Kelce, good tight end. Jamal Charles, good running back. Jeremy Maclin has ability to make plays down the field. Justin Houston, for my money, is the best edge rusher in football. Good secondary. Marcus Peters is a rookie. I think he's going to be a stud. If you guys listened when I was on From the Benches, with those guys. I was advocating for Marcus Peters. It seemed like every show. I loved him. I thought he was the best corner in the draft. I hope the best corner in the draft turns out to be Demaryius Randall, but Marcus Peters has been very good to start. So what I want to start with, Jason, is what matchup do you see that is the biggest to the Packers' advantage? And I'm actually going to go to the sideline on this. I just mentioned him earlier. I think Mike McCarthy against Andy Reid is a big advantage for the Packers, and it kind of hurts me to say that a little bit. Again, those of you that listen and have kind of followed some of my stuff, I grew up in an Eagles household. The good part of the later half of my childhood was when the Philadelphia Eagles had Andy Reid, Donovan McNabb, Brian Westbrook, those guys, and I kind of consider myself, if the Packers aren't playing them, I'll root for the Eagles for my dad's sake, which is kind of tough these days because they haven't played well at all to start the season, and that's, we'll kind of go around the league before we finish the show up here, but I think that Andy Reid has become a coach that just is able to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. It was clear on Thursday night they were a more talented football team. They were a better football team than the Denver Broncos. At home, windy, nasty weather against a noodle-armed Peyton Manning, and they still found a way to lose that game. And I think that McCarthy might play not to lose, but I don't think that he's going to do some of the egregious things that Andy Reid finds a way to do. I think McCarthy can out-coach Andy Reid. And this is kind of trivial because the game is played on the field, but I do think that there's some strategy involved. I think the Packers can win the coaching battle far and away here, in a large part due to some of the odd decisions Andy Reid makes and the what I consider the greatness of Mike McCarthy. So I like the coaching matchup for an advantage. Jason, what's yours?
Well, I mean, I got to go with the obvious, which is Aaron Rodgers and against Alex Smith. But we already kind of talked about that, and anybody against Aaron Rodgers is a mismatch. So I guess I'll be fair here, and I'll just say this. You know, I'm going to kind of play Jekyll and Hyde here. I'm going to go with the Packers defensive backs against the Chiefs wide receivers, who still have yet to catch a touchdown pass since the 2013 regular season. So, you know, the Packers, I always like to, you know, this is where I'll take my medicine, because towards the end of the Seahawks game, I did put a couple tweets out there that suggested that the Packers might need to shape up a bit if they want to win the game, which were construed as negative. My typical connotation there, and a couple of them were taken out of context, so I'll take credit. I'll take the blame where the blame is due there. So, you know, the Packers love to allow trends that are obvious that shouldn't continue to continue, and they also love to help teams stop streaks that should be continuing. So, for example, the Chiefs haven't had a receiver catch a touchdown since 2013. So what would Jason say here? You can guarantee that a Chiefs receiver is going to get into the end zone in this game against the Packers. Do I think the Chiefs are going to beat the Packers now because I said that? No. But don't be surprised if you see a Chiefs receiver score a touchdown on the Packers. It probably end up being tipped by a defensive back. Ha ha, Clinton Dix will tip another ball he should have intercepted. It'll fall into a receiver's hand, and they'll pick it off. But in all seriousness, I do think that the Packers secondary's got an opportunity here, you know, get some takeaways, make some magic happen on the defensive side, take the ball away. I think that's going to be a big key, you know, in a game like this. The Chiefs are a little bit more of a physical team, so the Packers are going to have to step up in that arena there. But I think, you know, keep your eye on number 23. I think this could be another game where Demaryius Randall comes up big and makes a big play. You know, would love to see Ha-Ha do some damage back there in coverage as well. And I think the defensive backs are going to have a heyday. So I'm going to go with our defensive backs, our being the Packers, against the Chiefs receivers.
Okay, so Jason likes the defensive backs against the receivers. I think that's another good matchup as well for Green Bay. Biggest disadvantage that I want to go with, I mentioned him earlier, Justin Houston, best edge rusher in football. Again, for my money's worth, you guys feel free to tell me that I'm wrong. A lot of people seem to like to do that these days, which is fine with me. I can handle it. But the biggest disadvantage to me is Justin Houston. I can't envision Kansas City not figuring out a way to line him up against Don Barclay. And, you know, like I said, Don Barclay wasn't as bad as what Pro Football Focus will tell you he was on Sunday night against the Seahawks, but he wasn't good either. I would feel much better about this game from that standpoint if Brian Bulaga was playing in this game, but he's not. Justin Houston, I think, can make some hay. I wouldn't be surprised to see him have two or three sacks. He has the capability to completely wreck a game. I hope Rodgers has his running shoes ready because I think he's going to have to escape and find a way to make plays that way. So that, in my opinion, is a disadvantage. And if the Packers do lose this game, I'm saying Justin Houston probably had a huge night. Jason, is that the one for you, or do you got a different one?
No. Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's, you know, he's a premier defensive player. And, you know, we talked about the offensive line for Green Bay. On the interior, they're fine. But on the outside, it just seems to be an issue. So, you know, I think the Packers are going to win this game. And I know we're going to get to that later. I don't want to, you know, tip too much off there. But, yeah, I mean, I guess – and the other thing with the Chiefs, too, that I'm kind of, you know, guilty of, you know, with my busy schedule during the week as well, is not being as familiar with them. I don't really know a whole lot about the rest of their squad. I will say this. I'm really glad to see Eric Berry back on the field. You know, he overcame the Hodgkin's lymphoma and has been a great defensive player for them. He's been a class act in Kansas City. So good to see him back. It'll be fun to watch him play live. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's just going to be that pass rush altogether. It's another game where we're going to have to keep an eye on the Packers' tackles and hope they can hold their own and keep number 12 upright.
By far, the best story of the offseason is Eric Berry. So, Eric, I'm sure you're listening to the show, and if you are, we appreciate your recovery. You're an inspiration to us all. But I'm not picking your team to win on Monday night, and that's going to segue into our predictions. I pegged this game as a win for the Packers. I had the Packers at 2-0 at this point so far, if you will. From our preseason show, I am 2-0 with Packers predictions. I have Green Bay at 2-0 at this point. I had them winning this game as well. I see no reason that they can't win this game as well. I don't think it'll be a letdown game. It's Lambeau Field. It's Aaron Rodgers. It's Mike McCarthy. It's Randall Cobb. It's all those players on the Packers offense. I think the offense can have a good enough night against them. I think the defense plays big. I think they limit Jamaal Charles as much as they can. I think they limit Travis Kelce as much as they can. Find a way to force Alex Smith into some mistakes. I like the Packers. I like them 24-14 over the Kansas City Chiefs. So not the 40-point outburst you've been used to if you've been going to Lambeau a lot recently, but just another win, just another big game, just another efficient game from the team. I like the Packers to be 3-0 at the end of this game. Jason, what do you got?
You know, the score hasn't really come to me, but I think you're probably right, Jacob. This will be another game similar to the Seahawks where it's not the offensive fireworks show that everybody's hoping to see because that's just not what the Chiefs do defensively, although who knows? I mean, the Packers could get on a roll, come out fast, and all of a sudden run away with it, especially if they get a couple turnovers and are able to turn those into points. So I think the Packers win this one for sure. I don't think we're going to see very many signs of a letdown. I think they'll have this one in hand and under control. Health is going to be another big thing here too. You know, Eddie Lacy, we don't know if he's going to go. If he's not going to go. If he does suit up, which I would be surprised, I think they'll probably give him, you know, 5-10 carries at the absolute most. 10 might even be too many. So, you know, the run game is going to be important for Green Bay to establish and especially against an active front like that. But, yeah, I think a low-scoring game. I can see the Packers being somewhere in the mid-20s, and I think KC tops out at about 17. You know, Packers get another big win on Monday night, 3-0, heading into what's going to be has become a bigger road game against the San Francisco 49ers after what we've seen from the Niners the first couple weeks. So I think this would be a nice little tune-up for them to get ready for a tough game on the road after two straight at home.
Tough game on the road and a site that they hope to visit once again later in the season. Of course, San Francisco's home field is where Super Bowl 50 will be held. Before we finish the show, I do want to go around the league a little bit, Jason. 2 weeks, hard to draw sweeping conclusions, but I want to know what has been the most surprising from a good standpoint and a bad standpoint around the league. I know you mentioned, you know, you kind of got to sit down and watch all the games on Sunday. I did as well. My biggest surprise, there's a lot there. I mentioned in the preseason show, from a bad standpoint, surprising to me is the struggles of Andrew Luck. Now, I don't know that Indianapolis is that good of a football team. I picked them to win a lot of games, largely based on a bad division that they play in. But Andrew Luck has been terrible. It's almost laughable at this point that I could pick him to win the league MVP. And, You know, he turned the ball over four times last night. The Colts are 0-2. The head coach is taking shots at their general manager by talking about the poor play of the offensive line, among some other things. There's some disconnect there between Pagano and Gregson, and it appears to be something worth talking about. This kind of feels like the San Francisco 49ers situation last year, where Trent Baalke and Jed York kind of aligned themselves against Jim Harbaugh. And we see where Jim Harbaugh is now. He's no longer the coach of the 49ers. Jim Tomsula is. Jim Harbaugh is in Ann Arbor. So I think that's something that will eventually fix itself. Andrew Luck's too good to not end up having at least some type of a good season. But he does have to take better care of the football, and that has to start this week against the Tennessee Titans. They have to get on the board with a win. From a good standpoint, I would say the surprise to me so far, you mentioned them. You know, I'm going to talk about the 49ers. I had them pegged to be one of the worst teams in the NFL. And granted, they got blasted on Sunday against the Pittsburgh Steelers. They gave up a ton of points. Schedule makers didn't do them any favors. They scheduled a noon game on the East Coast for a West Coast team. Jason, you know how that feels all too well. So do I, actually. We do this show later on my end so I can have you at home for this game instead of at work. But nonetheless, the 49ers actually played very well against the Minnesota Vikings. It was a week one game at home. That could be an emotional thing, but they don't look like they're completely incompetent. And that's something that I did think they were going to be. We'll see if the Packers have any trouble with them next week. I think that they'll have some trouble ultimately. I'll let you know if I think they're going to win that game or not. But 49ers have played well so far. The Dallas Cowboys have played well so far. We'll see how that goes down the road with Tony Romo being out with a broken collarbone and Dez Bryant being out with a foot injury. That's definitely going to add some issues to the Cowboys. And, you know, that's another NFC contender that's struggling. Not surprised by the Arizona Cardinals, just kind of mentioning some other teams around the league right now. But, you know, the Baltimore Ravens, that's another team. I picked them to be in the Super Bowl. They're 0-2. I guess that's one more thing I can add. They're 0-2, and they haven't looked good. They had one week where their defense was very good and their offense was bad, and then last week their offense was good and their defense was horrendous against the Oakland Raiders, allowed Derek Carr to go down the field and beat them. And that's nothing bad against Derek Carr or the Raiders, but when you're a team that I thought had championship aspirations, you can't have that happen. So, Jason, what around the league has caught your eye so far?
Well, did anybody expect the New York Jets to be 2-0 at this point? I mean, you know, they caught the Colts, who you mentioned, on the bad side, and Andrew Luck in a game where they just weren't ready and emotionally aren't in it, and who knows? I mean, maybe we might see the same thing out of the Colts this year that we saw from the Chicago Bears last year when they just kind of threw in the towel, didn't like what was going on around the team, the coaching staff, and there were too many internal issues. And it's a shame because the Colts were pegged to be a Super Bowl favorite by a lot of experts and analysts and a team that might have lined up against our very own Green Bay Packers at the end of the season had things gone well, or if things end up going well both ways. I mean, there's still time for them to turn things around, but that was a really ugly loss against the Jets. But the Jets are 2-0, so that's, you know, that's kind of interesting. The Bengals also undefeated at 2-0, playing some good football. You know, the Broncos persevered and came up with a big defensive play to keep themselves at the 2-0 mark in that West division. And so who knows how good the Raiders are going to be. Derek Carr is improving, and so he might have that team ready sooner than later. You know, unfortunately, the Chargers weren't able to get it done, and then the Chiefs are coming to Lambeau this week. So, you know, in that division, Denver kind of takes a leap up. The Cowboys making do without Dez Bryant and without Tony Romo and on the road against a divisional opponent. You know, they were pretty impressive. I'd have to also say, too, I mean, after what we saw the Rams do to the Seahawks the week prior, to see them get run out of the gym by the Washington Redskins was kind of impressive. I mean, Washington's been kind of a mess, and RG3 is like the fifth quarterback on the depth chart, and there's only three quarterbacks on it, so you do the math there. But they were able to get a big, big win against the Rams this past week. So, you know, I'll go with all that. I mean, obviously the Packers, not a surprise that they're 2-0, but are undefeated. And then you've got a race between the Falcons and the Panthers. They're both undefeated so far. The season is young, and those are some teams on the good side that I saw that I liked. On the bad side, I gotta go to the Eagles. I mean, you know, Bill Johnson made another good point, too, when he said, okay, so did anybody think that after the second week of the season, the Eagles' offense was going to be putrid? And then he said, and this is the perfect illustration of why the preseason doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot. I mean, what we saw in week three, in game three against the Packers, everyone was like, man, the Eagles might be good this year. I have a couple of Eagles fans who are friends. They certainly thought their team was going to the Super Bowl after that performance. Doesn't appear as though Chip Kelly's got total control over that team and that offense, or at least not so far. They lost a big home game to the Cowboys. Never want to lose those home games to your divisional opponents. So I got to go with the Eagles. Jacob, you already mentioned the Indianapolis Colts. There were a lot of people that thought the Bears weren't going to be very good. They have not been. How about the Lions at 0-2? You know, that was kind of a surprise. I thought they might bounce back on the road against the Vikings and still want to get themselves back to 500. So they're 0-2 after the past couple seasons with the Packers having to constantly duke it out and battle back and forth with Detroit for the division lead in the North. So those are some of my teams on the worst side. I mean, Seattle's 0-2. I'm not going to put them on this list. They're still a very good football team. It's early in the year, and they faced a couple of really tough opponents their first couple of weeks. So, you know, it should be a fun season. There's a lot of parity going on. You know, you see the Browns winning a game, and the Ravens are 0-2, but you know they're going to bounce back. There's a lot of magic still to be had in this 2015 season. It's going to be exciting.
Oh, one other thing that I do have to mention that's a little surprising from a hilarity standpoint. I've got a friend who's a Titans fan and spent all of Sunday telling us how wagering some jelly beans on the Titans was a good bet because Johnny Manziel sucks. And there's probably more truth in that statement. I don't think he's any good, but it was funny to see him kind of have two long touchdown passes and have some success against the Titans. But anyways, moving on from around the league, because we all know the best team in the league is the Green Bay Packers. They play Monday night against the Kansas City Chiefs. They will have a 7:15 kickoff on Monday night, Lambeau Field. Jason and I will be there. We're going to try and figure out something for the show to do it, figure out a way that we can do it together. I'm not sure if that's going to happen or not, but we're going to try our best to figure out a way to do it. And with that, that's going to do it for today's show. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. You can follow the show on Twitter. That's at Pulse of the Pack. If you follow me personally, I am at Jacob Westendorf. You can follow Jason at Jason Perrone. And give Jason a break on Twitter, guys. He's allowed to tweet whatever he wants. Sometimes he makes me mad, too, but he makes me mad when we're talking in person as well. So it's just a thing. Let him be. It's Twitter. Don't take everything so personally.
Let it be like John. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Not a problem at all. But also want to thank our sponsors. We mentioned Mark Mayfield earlier, also Waukesha Sports. We want to thank you guys for all the great work that you do for us. Monday night, Green Bay Packers got to get to 3-0. That Seahawks thing, that's done. That's in the past. It's over. Now it's time to focus on the Kansas City Chiefs. Thank you, as always, to listening to Pulse of the Pack.
Of the PAX Podcast. Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice. Hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If the Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.